We are for a Tuesday afternoon through until 2:30. Now, you may have seen Zach Moratti on the TV recently. He's been on the Late Late Show, and I think he was on with Tommy Tiernan as well, chatting about his new book. The book is called Life Begins in Leitrim. Zach was born in a refugee camp in Iraq during the Gulf War. It was during the regime of Saddam Hussein. And eventually him and his family got out. They moved to Leitrim, to Carrick-on-Shannon. And that was at the age of 11. And when he arrived, he couldn't speak English and didn't know a lot of what was going on. I'm sure it was a bit of a culture shock. But anyhow, he's written a new book about coming to Ireland and about how he's grown up within the GAA, because he went on to play football and hurling and play senior inter-county hurling for Leitrim. In fact, was instrumental in Leitrim winning the Laurie Maher Cup, scored the winning point a few years ago in the final. And I'm delighted now that Zach joins us on the line. Zach, good afternoon, sir.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, good to talk. And this is a great book and tells a great story. And I've only sort of skimmed the surface there with the introduction. But let's go back to when you were very young, because growing up in a refugee camp, I mean, there was nothing very exciting about that, I'm sure.
Yeah, if I'm trying to look back now 20 years ago, it was a completely a different world. If you're trying to compare it to kids that are growing up in Ireland, you know, if I'm trying to compare the two, in Ireland we're spoiled rotten. Obviously, if I'm trying to compare it to the refugee camp, it was a completely different world. And no, obviously it was different as well when you're living in a dictatorship country. Just because we were just kind of used to the system that we were brought up in a refugee camp. We didn't know any different. We didn't really know what a functioning democracy was, you know. So it's completely a culture shock as well, moving over here. And, you know, Ireland's such a, you know, very cold country. Everything was different, everything.
So your family's from Kurdistan, and you grew up under the Saddam Hussein regime. So, I mean, as you mentioned there, it was just an entirely different sort of a setup to growing up in a proper functioning democracy.
Yeah, so it's obviously it's a lot of people in Ireland or in the rest of the, you know, they wouldn't know what a dictatorship is, but they know what a democracy is, you know. Mm-hmm. Obviously, dictatorship obviously is ruled by one man, and everybody in Iraq where we were, everybody lived in fear, and there was just a statue of Saddam Hussein. But you know, when you try to tell people to that, and they just don't like, well, no one ever said anything about it, and says, yeah, that's the way it was. No one would ever open their mouth, or if you opened your mouth, your whole family could have been in prison for the rest of their life. It's not like over here where we have, you know, judges and juries, and we have the whole lot here. Everything, there's a proper system here. Over there, they might look like they had judges and solicitors, but they really had no power. The minute a police officer arrests you and they just bring you to court, and that was, the judge will give you just 20 years straight away just for saying, you know, Saddam was BLX. You know yourself. Yeah. You couldn't. Yeah, you know, it's a different world, different. It's a different environment as well, and it's obviously we're Kurdish as well, and Kurdish people would be treated differently compared to the rest of their own people in the Middle East. And unfortunately, and since Kurdistan was divided in the 1923s, Michael Sayak of Britain with the French commanders, they divided, and they just woke up one day and they sat in Lausanne in Switzerland, I think it was. So they promised Kurdistan, an independent Kurdistan, but obviously that never fell through. And then obviously the Kurdish people were always fighting for Kurdistan and Kurdish rights. And before the 1920s, everybody lived in a normal life before Iraq was created. There was no such thing as Iraq. Mm. There was no Saudi Arabia. There was none of this type of, you know, Turkey. Everybody just kind of, it was just like the Ottoman Empire, and there was the Persian. You know, everybody just kind of lived together. Back then, you know, like you look at the whole Iraq and Iran and Turkey, it's very multicultural, you know, and obviously when this divide happened, it divided a lot, it caused a lot of wars and a lot of killings, and obviously we were left without a country. And We are the largest ethnic minority in this world without a country. And there'll never be peace in the Middle East till Kurdish people get their till they're treated equally to Arabs and Turks. And there's been war 100 years in the Middle East, and there'll be a war for another 100 if Kurdish people are not treated equally. And there'll be always Kurdish men up that mountains with their AK-47 fighting for their rights. And this, you know, this is going on hundreds of years, and it will go on forever till Kurdish people are treated equally.
Well, you and your family eventually got permission to get out of the refugee camp, and the destination was Ireland. I'm sure that came as a bit of a surprise to you. You wouldn't really have been familiar with Ireland before that.
Yeah, it was a massive surprise, to be honest. I never even heard of where Ireland was, because, you know, never heard of it, really, to be honest. I'll tell you the truth. And obviously, probably my parents and that would have known, but I wouldn't have known anything about, because when we went to school, we didn't learn anything about outside Iraq. We only learned about Saddam, and that was it. It was this propaganda country. We only learned one thing, and that was it. And Ireland, obviously, when we moved over here, I was a big culture shock. Everything was different. Everything was beautiful. It was like coming to heaven, as I say, and it's a great country. And Ireland has been very good to all foreign people that have come over here as refugees, as immigrants, as, you know, I think they're being very good to us. You know, there is no complaint from our side of things. You know, there's about close to 3,500 Kurdish people live in Ireland, and they have no complaint. They're all happy here. We're treated equally as an Irish man and as any Irish man and women, and that's what it's all about. And unfortunately, Kurdish people in their own countries are still refugees, you know.
Yeah.
And then when they're living here, they're treated equally as an Irish man. And why can it not be like that over there, you know? This is where the problem is.
It helped greatly that you were fairly athletic. So you started playing the GAA, football and hurling, but you eventually made a choice and decided that it was going to be hurling.
Yeah, so I played all sports, and then, but, you know, when I got to about, you know, when I moved to the Thomas Davis GAA club in Dublin, and you're just training, we played, just stuck with Gaelic and hurling, and I played Gaelic and hurling. I played all levels between junior, senior, hurling, football. I played all levels in the club, and I just loved hurling. I loved GAA. I loved Gaelic, and, you know, it was just as I was down in there, I was, you know, at a meeting with Sports Games Racism Ireland, and Brian Kerr, former Ireland man, just says to me, Jesus, you're giving out about you'd rather go watch a junior G hurling match than a Premier League soccer game. I said, yeah. He said, you sound like a proper coachie. But that was just so funny the way, you know. He wasn't happy with me one bit. Yeah.
But you did gravitate towards the GAA, having played all sports, but you found that your home was the GAA. You ended up playing for, you were living in Dublin, but played senior county for Leitrim, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And I was, and Martin Kniff, obviously, when I was younger, I would know him and his son Clement, and he would have been my manager. And then he asked me, could I give it 1 year and just see how it goes? So I ended up playing for close to 9 years then, and sometimes the travelling is the tough part. As you know, if you're in Donegal and there's Donegal hurlers or footballers living over in Dublin, it's very hard. There's a lot of travelling involved as well. And look, I all them travelling over the years, you know, it paid off, and we end up, you know, we got what we wanted. We just wanted to win the cup in Croke Park and get to play in Croke Park, because not everybody gets to play in Croke Park. It's nearly the same 5 or 6 counties. They get to play in Croke Park, and, you know, it's the same couple of hundred people, you know, that always, if you look at the Donegal, you know, panel of football, even, like, it's the same with the fellas that have been Michael Murphy and Neil McGee, and it's always the same lads that get to play, you know, and I'm sure there's thousands of footballers or, you know, or hurlers playing in Donegal. They don't get often to get to play in Croke Park. It's the same 15 or 20 lads, you know, and that could go on for 10 years. It could be the same players hanging on for 10 years, you know. But that's why it's so special about Croke Park, you know. Not everybody gets a chance to play there.
You get
the enjoyment out of it.
Well, not only did you play there in the Laurie Maher final, but you scored the winning point.
Yeah, it was before the normal time, and just that point kind of it kind of changed the game. And I think the most important, it was the pass that changed the game. You know, when we were 3 points down to go for the draw, that was the most, that was the, usually I'd be a little bit of a greedy. You know, when you're a corner forward, you're always greedy. But yeah. That day, I wasn't greedy. I passed the ball. The lads were very surprised with me after the game. They couldn't believe that I passed the ball. So they were all buying me points after, so you couldn't complain then.
No, absolutely. It made the difference. What about, I mean, you were 11 when you got here, so, you know, you knew about the hardships back in Iraq, in the refugee camp, and you were also, you knew English, and you were aware, all too aware of the, you know, the cultural differences, and you came here, you know, all like playing hurling and GA football just would have been totally alien to you. But what about growing up here in Ireland? I mean, did you experience any, you know, any comments, any racism? You know, how was it generally positive, or were there any incidents?
Oh, no, 99% of things were 99% of things were positive. Like, come here, look, you're going to get it in any sport. You're going to get racism in any sport around the world or any sports. But like, to me, like, there is, you know, there's probably racism in GA, but small, tiny bit. It wouldn't be that much, you know. But sometimes, like, I'm a Kurd, like someone calling me a name, it wouldn't really bother a Kurdish person, because we're being we've been used to so much of genocide, and, you know, Turkey bombing us, the Syrian government bombing us, we're getting bombed by all, we're used to, you know, for Kurdish people it's all about survival, you know, we have experienced a lot worse, you know. That's only a small little thing for us. I wouldn't even if someone calls me something, I wouldn't even take that into my head. It'd be gone through the right ear, gone out to the left, you know. So it wouldn't really bother me, you know.
Right. So
but probably people from or a different background, they would take it differently. I just wouldn't, you know. Kurdish people, we worried about, you know, people that live in a home in Kurdistan. We're worried about the Kurdish people where their villages are getting bombed, their ethnic cleansing happening, genocide still happening to this day. That's our biggest worry, you know. We're not worried about someone calling us a name. It's, you know, it doesn't really bother us. It doesn't bother us Kurdish people, you know.
So what about the currently, you live in Dublin, you play hurling for the Thomas Davis Club in Tala, and you do some coaching, and you work for a pharmaceutical company. Life's good.
Yeah, so I play with the Thomas Davis GAA Club. I've been coaching in Thomas Davis for the last 16, 17 years, you know, been hurling or football. And sometimes it's great that the lads that I used to have when I was younger, he used to be my coach, and I ended up playing hurling with them, and I ended up becoming friends with them. And it's just a, you know, a typical GAA thing, which is great that way, you know. And then as you get older, then I start playing with adult level, and the lads that I've coached, I end up playing with them. So it just goes around in a circle, you know. It's just a great community spirit that's involved in the communities in Thomas Davis GAA Club. And, you know, when we're... you know, we're doing great. You know, we only walk off three little primary schools beside us in Tala. So it's we're all in it together, and they're treating me as equally as the rest of the lads in Thomas Davis. They don't look at me as different to anybody else in the club.
It's a great. I mean, it's all in there in the book, right up to the present, and it's a great example of, you know, what can be achieved, and, you know. You constantly refer to people back in Kurdistan and what they have to endure, and I suppose this is an example of how there should be hope, and how, you know, people can overcome adversity, and the importance, I suppose, of embracing a difference as well, and sort of sometimes just shrugging your shoulders and getting on with things. But it's from Kurdistan to Croke Park, Zach Moradi, Life Begins in Leitrim. Great book, Zach. Well done, and thanks for chatting with us.